College basketball fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. He's Marshall. I'm Chris. And we're here to discuss and banter back and forth, do some predictions with the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 stuff about a wild, wild weekend in the sport, in the tournament. It was the wild, wild west, literally. The Pac-12 smacked all of us, for the most part, right in the face. And actually, I say smack. It wasn't a backhand. It was a nice punch to the jaw. They turned their fist perfectly, turned over their punch like they call it in boxing. And, wow, they put the nation in shock mode. It was shock and awe, so to speak. So we are here to assess the damage on everybody's brackets. I mean, obviously, for the folks that have like, dude, I got 9, I got 11 out of 16. My guess is you're lying, one. And if not, that's cool. But who did you pick to win the championship? I mean, just the biggest Pac-12 fanboys. I'll give those guys credit still. But my God, the Pac-12 said we demand respect. And they're going to get it. Don't get me wrong. We're going to eat our crow. We're also going to have to be critical of the other leagues, including, of course, the Big Ten that got, 9 teams in, only one remain. We did talk about a year ago, you know, it's been 2 years. That's so crazy. A year ago, we felt like, man, the round of 32 matchups are going to be sick. And obviously, the virus came in and shut everything down. But what a payback. It was well worth the 2-year wait for this opening weekend. Unbelievable weekend, man. So many high seeds, double-digit seeds. Like I said, the Pac-12 getting respect, only losing one game. Phenomenal, phenomenal opening weekend. And the funny thing is, here we are with all this shit that happened, all these double-digit upsets and first time they got a victory and all this stuff, and there's still 3 number one seeds in. Wonder if on this cockeyed, crazy year, wonder if it's going to be 3-1 seeds in the Final Four. That would just add to the craziness in a sense of, or not the craziness, but this shit doesn't line up. It doesn't add up. So we're going to talk all about what happened from the weekend. We're not going to dwell on break it down game after game because it is Wednesday now. Obviously, Saturday, they tipped the ball on the Sweet 16. So we will go through our preview and predictions for the Sweet 16 in the Elite 8, much like we did the 64 and 32 last week. I'm excited to talk basketball, no doubt about it. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Up Radio and download the show directly there. Listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find this show under the Rope It Up Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found in a lot of places. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, football, baseball, boxing, everything in between. And one more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV. The plans start as low as $69 a month. Simple pricing, no hidden fees, no annual contracts. The cloud DVR is available. You can stream it anywhere on any device. And one more thing to this deal here. If you upgrade to the Choice package, it gives you a free year of HBO Max. Plus, and this is for a limited time, the rest of the season NBA League Pass Premium. Like I mentioned, limited time there. Since the merger, the CBS Viacom merger, all of a sudden the NBA, and that is kind of in cahoots. So that's a good deal. That's AT&T TV. And what I meant by is AT&T TV and CBS Viacom are now, kind of tied together. So it's a good deal. You should kind of check it out there. All right. So we're just going to get this out of the way right now. We're going to eat some crow like a lot of the country should. I've already seen, you know, some folks out there making excuses, and that's it. You know, there's always excuses or reasons. Sometimes it's hard to find out which really what it was. Of course, some of the teams, you know, with that had COVID issues didn't get to practice all week, and some of them lost, but some of them won. Obviously, the home court not having a full stands, you know, the seed, the lower seed, you know, that's a potential advantage. It's kind of like the NBA bubble where, well, if there's no fans to cheer you on or a huge crowd, that does make a difference. But, and those are, some of those are reasons, but let's be honest. It's time to eat some crow for the Pac-12. Lots of crow to be had. Gotta eat it. You know, I like my crow a little crispy, personally. Even like fish. For some reason, I like fish. Doesn't have to be fried fish. But I still like it crispy. So get your utensils out. You know, I got a bib on, like where I'm eating ribs, because there's so much crow on my plate. But hey, we're standing up and taking it like a man, okay? We're not going to sit here and make all these excuses. Shouts out to the Pac-12. I never would have guessed that they got that done like that. Some of the numbers are just silly when you look at I mean, Pac-12 was 9-1 on the court. This tweet says on the court because obviously VCU and Oregon game got canceled, so they just got a bye. But five of those nine wins have come as an underdog, and four of those wins as a dog were by double digits. All four Pac-12 wins as favorite have been by at least 16 points. I mean, Colorado did get a win at the first game since 2012. Oregon State won its first game since 1982. UCLA still alive. They took out Michigan State. Wow. I mean, we're going to get to the Big Ten and others. But, Marshall, holy crap. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall, see how he's doing. First of all, how you doing? Second of all, you got to eat some crow, just like, you know, your co-host here.
I'm doing good physically, mentally. My dad was actually down in Dallas for training. And so we checked out a bunch of different sport bars and restaurants, watched a whole lot of basketball, and had a nice, good amount of sodas. So yes, I'm doing good, but man, I was massively wrong. I said to fade the Pac-12 in pretty much every pick besides Tennessee game. I said fade the Pac-12, and yeah, I look like a damn fool. You're 100% right. The Pac-12 is still alive and kicking in a lot of brackets, unfortunately. But hey, they've stepped up and played when other teams didn't. As I was saying before we did our show, now, if I could go back and redo the podcast, I would not change it. I will give 100% credit to what the Pac-12 has accomplished. 100%. I undervalued them. And they've had a very, very strong conference tournament run. But I'm also not going to be the guy that is pretending to be the diehard Pac-12. I knew it all year. And I get that there are some people out there that maybe were. But if the Pac-12 was your best conference all year, why were there not more teams ranked? I think that there's kind of that 50-50 of part of its tournament matchups. And part of it is the fact that, hey, these teams have just stepped it up when it mattered. Like, I don't want to discredit what the Big Ten did this year, because the Big Ten's conference was phenomenal. And for the most part, we had like seven teams in the Big Ten that were almost ranked like top 15 all year. So it would be stupid to say, hey, the Big Ten, man, this year, they have choked, yes, but the wins and losses they put up in the Big Ten were also deserving too. But dear Lord, Chris, they really, really have choked, because I even said on this damn podcast, I think 3 out of 4 teams can be Big Ten in the Final Four. And that is definitely eat crow, pie in the face, like look like a clown. Like that was a really dumb hot take. But just from the track record, there was a lot of teams in the Big Ten this year who had really phenomenal seasons. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to having rings on your fingers or credibility, a lot of these Big Ten schools just fell flat on their face. And there's not really any excuses they can have that any other school wouldn't. I mean, just to kind of, we'll obviously get into the show here, but I mean, I don't even know where you would start with the biggest surprise of the Big Ten. I mean, the fact that there's only one team still around really does speak volumes, because there was 9 in it. Like, just mathematically, you're thinking, okay, well, wait, there's one Big Ten team left in the Sweet 16, and there's 4 in the Sweet 16 from the Pac-12. Now, thankfully, 2 of those Pac-12 teams play each other. So the Pac-12 credibility is going to die a little bit for us, because USC plays Oregon. Now, the kicker is the fact that, Chris, USC is a 6th seed and Oregon is a 7th seed. And Oregon getting there basically ran Iowa out the gym. And I'll give credit to Luka Garza, because Luka Garza played his ass off. But Oregon could have dropped 100 on Iowa if they'd wanted to. The defense we thought was solved did not come to play against Oregon or against Iowa. And Oregon has just looked really good. Like, that Oregon over Iowa win really stood out to me, because they're essentially the same kind of team. And from what I'd seen this year, earlier in the year, Oregon, I thought, was a lesser version of Iowa. But when they played head-to-head, dude, it was like Iowa was just trying to mimic Oregon. And Garza goes for like 36 and 15, Chris, and they still lose 95 to 80. Big Ten, you let me down. Pac-12, I'll give you a round of applause, a golf clap times like 100. What a performance thus far by the Pac-12.
Yeah, and just looking at this first round, it went in waves, because, you know, after the first round, Pac-12 was 6-0, Big 12 was 6-1, Big 10 was 6-3. And of course, when you get 9 teams in, you're going to have some lower seeds. Michigan State got beat early, you know, that type of thing. So 6-3 is not a bad number, considering you get 9 in. SEC was 4-12. Big East was 2-2, ACC was 2-5, and then it all fell apart for the Big Ten. 7-8 overall so far now through the first two rounds. In that second round, 1-5, 0-3 on Sunday, 1-2 on Monday. Obviously, Michigan, the only team that got it. It's one of the worst runs there since they expanded in 1985 from 32 to 64. And in that first round, I mean, how can't you look at Oral Roberts over Ohio State in overtime, 75-72, and just be like, oh, my goodness gracious, like Oral Roberts, they freaking did that? I mean, that one, Syracuse, you know, beating San Diego State by the way they did was kind of like, wow. North Texas beating Purdue. I had Purdue in the Sweet 16. Wasn't a big shocker, like you said, with the Oregon State 12-5. 5-12s historically have been the one that you point to. The 4-13s actually of recent years, maybe the last 5 to 6 years, have actually happened more. But more in that first round, West Virginia losing to Syracuse. Like, I mean, this shit is just some of the – and then Oral Roberts, you know, backing it up and beating Florida the next one. And I actually skipped ahead there. I didn't mean that. Abilene Christian beating Texas 53-52. That was like, oh my goodness, Ohio beating Virginia. That wasn't as much of a shocker, but still, you know, a pretty big shocker. And we were talking about the campus of Santa Barbara, beautiful campus against Creighton. 63-62, they barely got by them. So, I mean, all sorts of stuff. UCLA, BYU. I thought that'd be Michigan State beating BYU. That's, I guess, not the biggest shocker. But, I mean, when you look at just round one in general, it's just unbelievable, some of these numbers. Oral Roberts, the second 15 seed to advance to the Sweet 16, just in general. Shouts out to Oral Roberts. That, the first time that's happened since 2013, of course, Florida Gulf Coast. And when Syracuse, for some reason, when Syracuse is a, you know, is a bad seed, 11th, they advance. You know, the third straight time as a double-digit seed, they've gotten to the Sweet 16. This year, 2018 and 2016. I mean, some of these numbers, though, it just blows you away that this 9 double-digit seeds advanced to the round of 32, second most all time. And when you look at that Texas upset by Abilene Christian, that was four of them, 13 seeds or higher for the first time. Texas had 23 turnovers and 60 possessions. That was ugly. But that first round, and even some of the stuff talking about the second round, it just blew me away how many double-digit seeds were able to do what they did.
Yeah, and credit to and I don't know the name, but credit to the guy who stepped up for Abilene Christian and made the two free throws to win the game with like 1.6 seconds left. And I say credit because
garbage free throw shooter too heading into it.
57% free throw shooter, cold blooded, hits them both for the win.
Especially after a big three that looked like Texas was going to win, you know?
I've seen so many college basketball players this year that are much, much better than a 57% free throw shooter miss very hurtful free throws for me. And that 57%. Season's on the line. It's a dude, ice in my veins. I got this. And his form wasn't even the prettiest, but the dude drilled them both. Like, dude, that is a hell of a shot. I will say when that Texas game started, they kept showing the graphics of Abilene Christian was the best defensive team in their conference. Now you're thinking though, realistically, okay, they are the best from their conference, but what's that say on a big picture? Because obviously their conference is not the, again, the relevance of a Big 12. But, dude, they came out to play that night, and Texas was dying to get a bucket at all. So, credit to Abilene Christian. And it is funny, for Ohio State, during the start of our year, I remember I called their half-court offense like garbage because I didn't think it was that good. And for whatever reason this year, I really didn't see Ohio State play that much on conference just because, again, it's hard to watch every single team play in a conference, let alone in college basketball. So I never really saw Ohio State have a great game. So I'm sticking with my point of Ohio State's half-court offense wasn't that good. But, man, when you saw the scoreboard just kind of keep ticking the way it was, you're like, uh-oh. Like, huh. Because the hype going into that game, Chris, was Oral Roberts has the highest scoring player in the country, which is awesome, but they can't play defense. So they're not the kind of the water cooler talk was, okay, well, you know, Oral Roberts is going to be able to drop 80, but Ohio State might score 95 on him. So let's see what happens. But when Oral Roberts was up 6.5 and you're thinking, oh, okay, Ohio State's going to make that second half run to, you know, push away like a good team will. They never did it. Oral Roberts came out strong at the start of the second half. And every time, and unfortunately, I had to go to work for a softball game. But every time I kept checking my phone for updates or was looking at my group chat, I was thinking, this score is not changing. And when you're under the 10-minute mark and that score ain't budging, you're like, Oh, game on. Okay, at that point, unless you're a diehard Ohio State fan, which I'm not, you got to be pulling for the upset. Unless you had Ohio State winning your bracket or you had money in Ohio State, dude, that was a what a super fun thing. It, again, a 15 seed is not gone past the first weekend since Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast. But it just goes to show that, hey, when you got the leading scorer in the country, like, anything happened. I've talked a lot this year about how I think there's a lack of great guard play across the country, just because I think this year it's true. Not with Earl Roberts, though, because you have the best scoring guard in the country, 20 to 30 on a night, or at least run an offense where he's going to feed other people on his team. But, yeah, massive credit to them. A 12 and 13, Chris, winning has become more of a common thing of late, but you're never going to convince me that a two seed's a common feature, just because the committee normally does a good job of putting the twos who deserve it. And realistically, a two should not ever lose. But credit to Earl Roberts for pulling off the victory, because that's a hell of a win. And a nice reminder that, hey, the small schools, like, you don't get the notoriety. Obviously, Earl Roberts is playing a school whose football stadium sits 106,000 people at Ohio State. Like, you know, the mathematics of financials and recruiting and the TV contracts, like, none of that even matters. But on a given day in March Madness, Chris, it don't matter. It who's going to score the most points? And that was a really super fun upset. And that probably, you're right. I mentioned Iowa again, beat up pretty bad. Ohio State definitely was the biggest Big Ten choke moment of the tournament opening weekend, hands down.
Yeah, and we'll talk about why it isn't Illinois in just a second. Oregon 95-80, like you mentioned. Gonzaga, at times Oklahoma played with them, and then they kind of, you know, tore them out the frame to close. Ukala kept it going, 67-47, taking away the, you know, the dreams of Albaline. But Creighton, really, I was wondering about that Ohio all of a sudden when Creighton and Ohio matched up. They played really well. Michigan down the stretch pulled away from LSU. Florida State handled Colorado. Soft-ass Bama beat Maryland 96-77. They were pissed off. USC and Kansas. Kansas, now we're missing somebody kind of key, and they really weren't necessarily a great Kansas squad this year, but 85-51. My goodness gracious. As I mentioned, Syracuse, I jumped the gun. They beat West Virginia 75-72. West Virginia's been in a lot of tight games. Arkansas kind of pulled away from Texas Tech there for a second, and then, like, less than a minute later, it was a tied game. They had to grind it out all the way 68-66. Houston said, we are meant to be a second seed. Go F yourself. I thought Rutgers was going to win that game 63-60. They did it. Like I mentioned, Oral Roberts. Villanova's in the Sweet 16 when it felt like they weren't going to be because of their injury. But the two games I want to highlight, obviously Oregon State and Oklahoma State. This one's a shocker to me, 80-70. And then Loyola, Chicago, and Illinois, and why that's not as big an upset. I'll let you talk it through, you know, a little bit there. But
why you got to do that?
Hold on. Let me get through this. Oklahoma State lost. And I'll give – they lost. But, dude, there's a guy that has a last name Cunningham. He's pretty decent. All year long, he's been one of the most clutch dudes. In fact, watch this. He scored 106 points in clutch moments this season, or clutch time. No other player has more than 63, but yet you couldn't find him getting the ball. It was like they were trying to ruin his draft stock right then and there and have him come back. Unbelievable. But just to kind of go with your Loyola, Chicago here, and I'll give you credit. You talked about this, that they shouldn't be where they are. And I said, I hear you, but we can't look into the past. You know, who did they beat? You know, I tried to make the other point, but here it is, dude. Now, right now, they are 15-5 all time in the NCAA tournament, tying Duke for the best winning percentage in tournament history, 75%. Holy cow. That's pretty crazy. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just had to get that stuff out about not feeding Cunningham in the clutch when you need it.
Oh, okay. Well, a couple things to say. And again, this is not pre-planned. This is honest reaction from me to my co-host. I made pretty good bets and picks. And like, I honestly, I pulled out some money. I was smart, paid some bills, won some bets. But the one that would have paid really, really nicely was I bet Oklahoma State to make the Sweet 16. So it's one of those things where, hey, if you win all of your bets, you're kind of playing with the house's money. And my house's money went to Oklahoma State. And of course, they got ran out the gym in the first half by Oregon State's bench, because Oregon State started the game shooting one out of 11. And Oregon State's best player, who was a Pac-12 first or second team all-conference guy, got in foul trouble. And the Oregon State Beaver basketball program, who hasn't done anything for a really long time, probably
it just sounds funny than their football team. That. Yeah, 82 is the last time they won a game in the tourney.
So this is the third week in a row, intentionally or not, my co-host has slammed me on a game I have to talk about where I lost money. So,
I was trying to give you credit with Loyola, too. I didn't even mean that.
Well, you backhanded me, and you hit me with a 2x4, now you're picking me back up. So I appreciate it, brother. That's very nice of you. Again, Chris did not know this at all. So this is a little bit of a dry sarcasm response. But for Mr. Cunningham, dude. I've heard some people say that dude was just straight up trash that game. And it wasn't even, it wasn't that his team wasn't giving him the ball. He didn't do a damn thing with it. He played an awful game. And I say this especially because, and I was asking a coach who, one of my coaches at my high school, he's been the head coach there for 20 years. That guy's just, he's a know-it-all great guy. And I asked him, I said, have you ever seen a guard get two shots blocked that were not at the rim? I've literally never seen this happen in a game I can recall in, I think, my life, where Cunningham pulled up for a three and got it swatted. He ran off a pick, dribbled, ball sent back in his face. So once alone, I was like, that's, you almost never see a block like that. Second half, same thing. Pulls up for a jumper at the elbow, shot blocked. The dude's 6'8". And he was afraid to run the offense. Or Oklahoma State's best player was their point guard Anderson, because the dude could drive to the lane and get fouls and make his free throws. Cunningham was passive aggressive. Didn't take the game over, proves nothing to me. And Grant, it's a small sample size. I'll admit that. He had a hell of a regular season.
And you're bitter.
True. And I get, but even my buddy who I was watching the game with texted me, he's like, dude, this is the number one pick? Because he didn't have a great first round game against Liberty. He was like 5-14. He was like 0-8 in the first half. So unless he was like sick, like, dude, you put up a dud in game one, your team won. And you put up a couple of points in your second game, but dude, that is not a number one player. The point guard Max from Oral Roberts, the leading scorer of the country, that dude balled out. Cunningham, and again, I am bitter because they lost, but even just from a basketball perspective, he wasn't even the best player on the court. The Oregon State guard, who was all Pac-12 this year, I forget, is either first team or second team, I believe it's Anderson, was the best player on the court. Hell, Cunningham was the second best player on his team behind Anderson. Like, even if you're sick, like, you gotta step up. But there was no stepping up. Oregon State as a team shot, I believe it was 18-65, around like 28%. It was just a really bad game where you had no momentum. They were down, I believe they got down 14 or 16 at half. They cut it to 2 twice, and they missed layups 3 different times to tie the game, but there was just no flow, because with about 5 minutes left in the game, Chris, they were 5-20 in the second half. That's, I don't care, that's miserable shooting. And Oregon State's offense was pretty similar, but Oregon State had built themselves a lead. They shot better free throws. And again, they had a player, and they had their guard out jocked Cunningham. So I've never seen a guy get 2 shots blocked.
I'm going to push back a little bit. Neither team shot the ball well, but 27% as a team for Oklahoma State is not good enough. And the free throws were key too. Now,
yeah.
All right, but hold on. Let's talk this through. Oklahoma State missed their free throws. It's not like they didn't get there. They got there more times, 38 than 35. Now, Oregon State hit 32 of 35, so that was key. But when you sit there and say he didn't do anything, when his team put up 70 points and he puts up 24 points as four steals, by the way, got to the line 10 times and won 8 of 10, didn't shoot great in the early portions. Maybe, I mean, he played all minutes, all 40 minutes, but the last 5 minutes, I specifically saw a highlight reel of him not getting the ball after I saw it live of him not getting the ball. So to say he didn't do shit, he was 6 of 20. That's not great. But the guy you're talking about was 3 of 12. So, you know, let's put that in perspective. They had a guy 3 of 11. They had multiple guys that were 0 of 3, 1 of 4. So what, like, if you want Cunningham to take over, you also have to feed him down the stretch. And that is not what they did. So did he play great? Did he play the best? No. But let's be fair about it. The last 5 minutes, he barely touched the ball. And it wasn't – I mean, he was open. He was looking for it, but they weren't giving the ball either. So it's not just, oh, Cunningham's now not a first-round pick or a first pick because of this game. And he didn't play nearly as bad as you're leading on. But – if you give him a couple more shots down the stretch in that game, who knows when it was close. But I think there is some of that, you know, this is obviously close to you too. But that's not, I'm not excusing him, but,
sure.
You know, 24 points when your team puts up 70 is not garbage, okay?
No, but I massively disagree with you, and I heard when my Memphis podcast I was talking about, the guy said the same thing, Cunningham didn't get the ball down the stretch. He was passive aggressive. The old school, like the knock on LeBron in the playoff, this is the exact same speech. I remember, I bet you.
Yeah, but LeBron had the ball in his hand. Cunningham didn't.
I completely disagree. There was at least 6 or 7 passes where Cunningham was feeding a teammate because he didn't drive to the basket. There was no, again, the guy I'm talking about, the other guard drove and got fouled. Cunningham chilled on top 3-point line. I bet.
Yeah, he was 10 of 13. He was 10 of 13 from the line. He got there 13 times. But Cunningham got there 10. So it's not like it was this big racial is what I'm saying. I didn't say he had a great game, but it wasn't garbage like you're saying. That's my point.
Well, okay. I think for a guy who's supposed to be the number one pick, supposed to lead his team, fair. Well, we can disagree on the garbage. But if you – and I wish I would have noted this. But if you were watching that game and you did not know – who was the best player on Oklahoma State, you could have had a great bar debate as to whether who it was their best player. Because from my opinion, there was multiple times where he was looking for a long range jump shot and not attacking as much as he should. Maybe part of that's just your legs were being tired.
Yeah. And he was 6'20". He did play 40 minutes. So he probably was tired. True. He didn't shoot the ball well, but like I said, when you go and get to the line 10 times and hit 8 of them, you know, he wasn't not doing anything. That's my point. He wasn't just garbage.
Well,
but you can finish it off and then we'll move on.
Sure, just wrap this up. I would say, though, I bet you 90% of the possessions they had down the stretch, he had the ball in his hands. And I saw I'm looking to pass the ball mentality instead of I'm going to get an effing bucket, which...
Well, 90% is just not true, Marshall, because I saw the last 5 minutes of the game and I saw a breakdown of it. So the 90% is just you just threw the stat out.
90% is high, but I would say he was looking to pass more often than shoot at times when the game could have been. Maybe here's a better.
Those are all fair statements. I didn't disagree with that. Sure. What I'm saying is it's not a garbage game. That's all.
Fair. I don't think that represented the player who dropped 40 on OU in an overtime game for the win. I just, and you, again, you just expect to see the best come out of players. Just like, again, I know nothing about these guys, but LSU's two guards last night against, or 2 nights ago against Michigan, both played 40 minutes. One was 30 and 14. The other one was 28 and 12. Normally it was just so weird because, again, I've heard the hype all year, and hell, we talked about them all year. It was
It wasn't hype. He was doing it on the court. Sure. So it wasn't hype.
No, he picked a rough time to not carry his team to the Sweet 16, which I think, aside from me, I think many people expected.
Right. Which is not a garbage game, though. That's my whole point. I've never said that he had a great game. It was his teammates that let him down. I didn't say that.
Fair.
But let's move on.
You're right. Okay.
Because we could just keep going back and forth all day.
Touche.
Let's get into what else you got? Yeah, I mean, I tried to give you something to lift you up, and you didn't even take the bait.
Okay, so
15-5, dude. They're 15-5 in the tournament now. Highest winning percentage of all time.
It normally, when an 8 seed or 9 seed beats a 1 seed, it's considered a little bit of a fluky upset. Like the 8 seed won. Like, you got to give them some street cred, but you're still like, oh man, if they played again, like the 1 seed would, you know, beat them up. I'm not saying that Illinois wouldn't beat them if they played again, but I do not think it would be, well, this is rematch, so Illinois, you know, or buckle up, Illinois, Chicago, like, or Loyola Chicago, like, you're going to lose. Like, those were actually pretty even teams. Because, as I was telling Chris before the show started, normally on an 8 or 9 upset of 1, that 8 or 9 seed gets, like, that miracle run in the game, or, like, goes on, like, a 15-0 run. They have to, like, grit their teeth out and find a way to hold on. They didn't even have to do that. Like, every part of me is like, okay, Illinois is going to make a run. They're going to make a run. They're going to come back. They're going to come back. They cut it down to 6 points twice. And both times, especially, I want to say it was around the 15-minute mark, Illinois cut it down to 6. And in a damn minute or two, punched right back in the mouth, back up to 12. That is the sign of a team that's not the lucky upset of 1. That's the sign of a team that, dude, I don't know why the committee ranked us 8th or 9th, but we are not a 9 seed. We are a legit damn team. And I know, fair to say, the Ken Pom ratings, people were different on that. The Ken Pom ratings, which are maybe the most respected rankings in college basketball, had them as 10th at the end of the season. So to some people, okay, if you're the 10th best team in this rankings, which people respect, maybe you don't deserve a 3 seed at most, but you probably should be a 4 or 5.
Can I say one thing? Go ahead. Add to that. In the top 20, all the big teams were in the top 20 of that too, just so you know.
Yeah, so you're thinking, okay, but that team just showed that, hey, they're legit. Because Illinois, besides Gonzaga, Illinois was the hottest team for the second half of the season and had – better wins than Gonzaga strictly due to conference. So you legit smacked in the mouth the best team in the past 2 months, and they couldn't even make a run on you. I just think that truly goes to show how good of a squad Loyola Chicago is, because that's just the DNA, Chris, of a game where you see it happen so much. Like, I still would have respected Loyola Chicago if they'd won the game. But the fact that Illinois couldn't even make it a tie game or make it a one possession game just truly blows my mind, because that's really how that goes. So that tells me, hey, that's a legit team, and I think they're going to win their next game as well. I was amazed with how they played, because DeSumo and Coburn for Illinois this year had phenomenal seasons. We can rip some of the Big Ten teams for having lackluster efforts, like Ohio State, definitely rippable. Iowa probably shouldn't have got beat up that bad. Purdue, you lost to freaking North Texas. Illinois, you lost as a 1 seed, but you lost to a really effing good team, so I'm not going to rip on y'all. Could have you probably won with DeSoma and Coburn? Sure, but your other Big Ten brothers would have got beat by Loyola Chicago as well, I would say, or there's a great chance of it, and so would many other teams across the country, Chris.
Yes, no doubt about it, and they proved that they should have been seated higher, hands down. It's not even a question. Any other things, because we should start to get into these predictions here.
Yeah, I would just say the one thing I'm happy, you know, Creighton, that's one thing I have picked right this year. I was hoping they'd make past the first weekend. It looks like maybe the players are together on the same page. I know they had to squeak by that first game, and they have obviously had the coaching drama. And actually, I've heard a lot of people think that the coach will be fired after this year is over. But aside from all the coach attention, that team I've been cheering for, I thought they would have been an Elite Eight team last year. I'm happy they made it to the Sweet 16 this year. Just kind of a good story. That's one team who I've enjoyed cheering for because Missouri lost opening round in North Carolina. I'm not going to talk about them because they got smoked bad. But props to Creighton. And my last point was actually, oh, and I think Chris, from now on, anytime Syracuse ever makes the tournament, I think we just got to bet them that first two games.
Well, especially as a double digit seed, like I said, that's three times in a row they made the Sweet 16 as a double digit seed.
And the biggest thing is, and I know everyone knows, it's not like we're having a hot take here. Like everyone knows this, but when you've played a whole year and in your conference, you've probably never played a team that plays a zone. That is such a stylistic mismatch that you're not used to. And I think I was talking to my mom or my dad. They're like, well, hell, why don't you just like, you know, well, they give credit to them for being the coach and that's how they run it. Well, yeah, and to some retrospect, that's really true. Maybe if another team like Syracuse ran a zone the whole year and you had to obviously need the talent too to score an offense, but maybe there is something to be said for, hey, like that zone just provides such a different look that takes offenses out of their flow, and for a given,
especially when you recruit to it, you know.
Yeah,
he's but done it for since the 80s, you know.
Again, if we're looking at just a stat sheet of what West Virginia and Syracuse did this year, West Virginia, again, they won six straight road games in the Big 12. That is a hell of an accomplishment, much better than Syracuse. Syracuse is one of the last four teams in many people's minds. I know they weren't ranked that way with their seed, but they were damn close. A lot of people thought that Syracuse was a 50-50 coin flip to make it. But you let them in, Chris. They got their wonky zone. All of a sudden, oh, shit, here we go, Sweet 16 again. And it's just – it is a stylistic matchup, which deeply benefits them and credits to them. Maybe that is something our teams could consider because West Virginia, they made a nice second-half run. But they never, if they had a lead, it was for one or two points at the most part. And then Syracuse came back and hit a shot on them again. So credit to them. That's a hell of a matchup to go against. And that will still benefit them as they continue to play.
Yeah, and let's not, you know, I mean, to say other teams should do it, that's true. But, you know, old boy's been there so how long? Since literally the 80s.
You know what I mean? So 100%. Yes,
just sir. To get a coach on your – coaching your team since the 80s. You know, that's a hell of a long time to be coaching. So I think that to be able to recruit like that and also not just recruit a defensive style, but also get stars in there too, to talk Melo in to come in there. To you know, so there's a lot more than, hey, we should try the zone. I'm not saying you're thinking that, but, you know, I did hear that too. And it's like, well,
true.
It's a little bit different. It's a little bit different of like, why is Gonzaga good? Well, they've had two coaches in the last, like, 30-some years, so that helps, you know what I mean? Anyway, let's get to it. The Midwest region is where we're going to start. Loyola, Chicago, and Oregon State, and then, speaking of, Syracuse and Houston. I think we're both on the same page with Loyola, Chicago, right? They are a six-and-a-half-point favorite.
Yeah, I will take them to win. I'll take them to cover as well.
Now, Houston, speaking of defense, speaking of some good all-purpose efficiency stuff, they've been doing that all year. They obviously had they've had a good program of late. Then you got Syracuse. Now, you're going to have, give or take, about 4 days to get ready for this zone that we're talking about. What says you here? Houston is actually pretty much the same, a six-point favorite. Much like Loyola Chicago, 6.5, over Syracuse. Is that enough time to get that thing figured out?
I'm going to go with Syracuse. I think that obviously Houston was not from too strong of a conference this year. I like cheering for Memphis. Memphis actually had the third best defense in the country this year. And when they played Houston, all those games were super, super close. Memphis just was the worst free throw shooting team in the country. Anyways, I don't think that Houston's resume is quite as good as it looks due to their lack of caliber opponents. And I don't think that offensively they're that talented either. So again, now you're going to have an offense, which I believe will struggle against the Syracuse team, that I think they'll be able to do enough. And if Syracuse continues to hit the threes at the absurd amount that they are, I think Syracuse wins. Their buddy Boeheim and that Kuvler, those guys are jacking threes like they're Steph and Clay. And I think if you keep that up, you're going to be able to get past Houston. I'm not saying, you know, but just for this pick, I will take Syracuse because I just don't think that the Houston offense will be able to do enough. Houston's defense got to make Syracuse work, but if you're jacking threes and playing a good defense, yeah, I will take Syracuse to sneak this one out, Chris.
And I'm going to go the opposite. I was down on Houston, or I kind of just didn't know. I was down on them for being a second seed, but the win over Rutgers not a killer, but I liked what I saw. And also they did beat Texas Tech earlier. So they do have some experience there. I'm going to go with Houston in that one. And let's just put it to the Final Four. Might as well Loyola Chicago against Syracuse or Houston. And what says you? Are you going Loyola all the way or what?
Yeah, I got Loyola Final Four.
And I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. Why not? It would be a great story. And this year, it feels like it's way more possible than that, you know, 2018, because you're like, no, dude, they talked us into it then. But now it's a system. It's happening. I'm with you there. Let's go out to the South region. Villanova and Baylor and Arkansas and Oral Roberts. Let's start with Nova and Baylor. I got Baylor to win this one cleanly. Nova got in. I'll give them credit without their point guard, but I think it catches up right here now.
I think I will give them credit because a lot of people faded them, Chris, but I do think now they've ran into a team that's too good. And the loss of Gillespie will kill them and hurt them here. I think Villanova's season comes to an end now.
And Baylor, this is their fifth trip to the Sweet 16, all of them since 2010. It'll be interesting if they can get over the hump. This other game here, this is saw someone on Twitter, and I kind of forgot about this, went back and checked it out. Haven't watched the game by any stretch, but Oral Roberts, Arkansas. Arkansas played Oral Roberts December 20th, and they were down 9 points in the second half, pulled away down the stretch, ended up winning by 11. But, you know, I mean, they won by 11, so they're favored by 11. Can Oral Roberts do it again? I'm going to say no. I think Arkansas will do it because of the preparation time. And they already kind of, okay, we didn't play good there. We know now what it takes to beat that team. Are you looking at upset, or are you thinking Arkansas is going to go ahead and move on?
I would look to bet the over. The over-under is 159. I think that you're going to see both teams score in the 70s and 80s, so that definitely would be a nice overplay. Yeah. But the one thing I've seen, because I've watched both Arkansas games, I do not think we've seen their best offense yet, or they're just a super athletic team whose offense is not that quite consistent. Now, again, I'm just the Marshall Rutter perspective. I think their point guard dribbles the ball way too damn much. Double zero, that dude just, I think, Chris, I think he loves to see himself dribble in the mirror. Which
he does the Steph warm-up in a game, is what you're telling me?
Yes, because there's moments where it's like, dude, where are you going? That is the quote that my head varsity coach loves to use. And she's like, where are you going? And it's a fair question. And I ask myself that many times too with Arkansas. Where are you going, bud? But when Arkansas can get out and run, they are a phenomenal athletic team. But Oral Roberts is the same way too. Now, when Arkansas plays half-court offense, you see a team that is not as good of a shooting team as you'd expect with the ranking they have next to them. So I think this will be a fast tempo game. But if we're finding two teams that love to run, I'm going to give my credit to the team who's got the more advanced skilled players. But again, Oral Roberts, you made a hell of a run. I would bet the over. I would take Oral Roberts with the points. Because I don't think Arkansas can put together a 40-minute game from what I've seen, but I'll take Arkansas to win and bet the over.
And the depth that both of us gave on that one, if they win by 22, that'll be a lost segment what we just had. Baylor, Arkansas, I'm going to go Baylor getting over the hump and getting to the Final Four. They got some bigs. They got the guards, a variety of them. They got the shooters. They got the penetrators to dish to the shooters or get to the rack. I got Baylor beating Arkansas coming out of the South region.
Oh. Arkansas plays their best game of the tournament, upsets Baylor.
There we go. All right, let's go to the West region here. Gonzaga and Creighton. I got Gonzaga in what should be a fun game. If Creighton shows up, much like they showed up against Nova down the stretch of the season, they're 13.5 point favorite. Is that just showing Gonzaga love, or do you think Creighton's kind of limping their way in to this spot?
I just, from seeing both teams play, I just don't see how Creighton knocks off Gonzaga. Because Gonzaga's got a really solid big in Timmy, and they have Suggs and Kispert. Like, I don't see how Creighton just matches in punch for punch on offense. And if they want to go a half court game, like, Creighton does not shoot the three balls well as Gonzaga. I just think this is a tough matchup. Obviously, Gonzaga is a good matchup versus any team because they're the best team in the country. But I just don't see what kind of style Creighton could play that would lead to them trying to pull off the upset, Chris. So I'll take Gonzaga to win. I would bet them with the points, too. I just think this is an awful matchup for Creighton.
USC in Oregon, the all-Sweet 16 matchup on the to play Gonzaga, according to us. How's this one go? I mean, Oregon, I did mention Oregon, and I mentioned it in my weekly article, too, where the last three times they've been in the tournament, they've actually made nice runs. Is that run going to continue to the Elite Eight to face Gonzaga, or is USC in the big man, and just how damn good they've looked, is that going to happen, that the Trojans move on?
Well, they did play once in the Pac-12 this year. They had another game postponed, and USC won 72-58. Obviously, USC is a little more of the traditional offense, I would say, with their post. Oregon obviously wants to run and gun, as we saw against Iowa. They played Iowa basketball better than Iowa does. So I'm going to take USC to win. I don't think that Oregon can play as well as they did against Iowa, so I think they have a little bit of a hiccup back. And obviously, these teams are a little more familiar with each other, too, compared to a Big Ten, Pac-10 game, Pac-12 game. But I'll take USC, Chris, just because I'm used to always picking USC against Oregon in football.
Right.
I'm going to lean the same way in basketball. And honestly, to give them credit, you could just pat on the back USC as much as they did for what they did versus Kansas. You could for Oregon against Iowa. So I will just lean my blue blood colors here and go Trojans over the Ducks, just because I'm used to saying that on this podcast. Just happens to be for a different sport.
And I'm going to go with the team that used to like to get the little quick guys in space. I'm going to go with the Oregon Ducks to win that game. But I'm really looking forward to that. Is Gonzaga going to lose to either one of those teams?
I wouldn't. I don't think so. I wouldn't bet it. I'll say that.
Yeah, I got Gonzaga moving on, as does my co-host. Okay, one more round of picks. This one coming out of the East Regional. Soft-ass Alabama, and I keep, I don't think they're overly soft, but I know what you mean. I just want to clarify that because I've said that numerous times now. Going against UCLA. UCLA, even though we just got done dogging Ohio State, did play a game in December against Ohio State, and I remember watching a chunk of it. It was 77-70 or something like that. They showed out pretty well. They beat a pretty good Michigan team at the end of the year anyway, pretty good, not for the whole year. They got kind of lucky, you know, I think Texas actually would have beat them, but that's neither here or there. Ukala versus Bama. What says you?
I'm not sure why we're talking about Ukala. They were down 13 points to Izzo in the second half, and they won the game. Like, they are on a hell of a three-game ride. And they lost four straight coming into the tournament. So this is definitely a team who's on a hot streak. I just think from the UCLA games I've seen, I think that they're kind of playing into Bama's hand, because all UCLA seems to do is just drive into the lane and kick out. Drive and kick, drive and kick, drive and kick. And I think for my two cents, I think the way to beat Bama is to be a little more physical and slow the game down. But I don't see UCLA doing that. So for my two cents, I will take Bama to win, just because if UCLA wants to get kind of a kick out fast game, I think the Bama's got the better players. I just don't think they match up well. So I will take Roll Tide in this matchup against UCLA.
All right, the next one, Michigan and Florida State. We know Florida State has a glue guy out. I haven't seen any update as far as him being able to return. Maybe that will happen. Maybe it won't. We know it's a serious enough injury that there's a chance it won't. But I am ignorant with that right now. I'll fully admit that. Not long ago, Michigan was looking like the team to beat. I mean, they were looking really, really strong down the stretch. It was kind of up and down. Then they had an injury. And let's be honest, Illinois just finished the season so strong, ended up taking the Big Ten title. Michigan, the only representative left of the Big Ten. Wouldn't it be funny if this is the year that the Big Ten win the championship? Michigan and Florida State, what says you, sir?
I will take the Wolverines just because I thought they got a really good fighting test from LSU, who made three different runs in the second half to take the lead against Michigan. And Michigan punched back every time. And I was kind of afraid, like many others across the country, about, you know, this Michigan team without Livers is not going to be the squad that we thought they were. And when you get a pretty damn good fighting punch from a team trying to upset you and you bounce back every time, then win the game pulling away at the end, I think this team has found a way to adapt themselves and win without one of their, well, without their core best players. So I will take Michigan to knock off Florida State and knock out Leonard Hamilton.
I'm right there with you. I think Michigan will win. I'm trying to get an update really quick here. We know it's a stress fracture, so that means something. Last week Howard said it'd be miraculous for Livers to return this season in general. This is what this article is saying, so I don't think there is any kind of, well, he's looking good. So what does that mean? Do you still think Michigan, because I got Michigan too, can beat Alabama even without a glue guy to get to the Final Four?
Yeah, I will take Michigan over Bama for the Final Four.
I'm right there with you. I think they do, and maybe that'll catch up to them then. That wraps up the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 predictions. We obviously will be back. Well, it goes till Tuesday, so we'll probably do another Wednesday show. That would line up. Does that line up on the surface with your schedule, sir?
Yes, sir. We will be back and rolling on Wednesday. Hopefully, we will start off with a little more, hey, by the way, we picked this game right. And I'd be like, oh, crap, did Marshall blow that Pac-12 hot take?
Well, I mean, it'd be funny. Like, if you look at it, you could make an argument for chalk the rest of the way through the Sweet 16 and through the Elite Eight. And that would be crazy if that turned around and now all the high seeds and favorites won and all one seeds got in. That'd be pretty crazy. Why don't you get us out of here, sir?
All right. Well, again, we'll be back on Wednesday, as Chris said, just to plan out your weekend or plan out on taking a day or two off of work because you established a coughing or cold symptom. Yes, Monday games on Monday and Tuesday, and then we'll have our Final Four set up Wednesday morning. So, yes, thanks as always for listening to us. We appreciate the love and support. Hopefully the Pac-12 loses a couple of games this weekend, or it's going to be really hard to defend my takes I had last week. So until then, stay safe, wear a mask, enjoy time with your family, enjoy basketball. The boys are out tonight. Peace.